tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 109 of In Tech We Trust. I'm Lauren Malhoit, and I'm joined by two of my favorite co-hosts, Yadin and Mark. Go ahead and say hello.
Woohoo! Hello!
As my meds talking for me.
As it should be.
That's right. I'm going to have some right now. Hey.
We need some after 20 minutes of messing around with Zencaster and various...
Zencaster, you
know.
Yeah.
Yes, it's masters of technology we are.
It's a sci-fi experience every week with Zencaster.
Ah, I forgot my beer. I see I'm in a conference room recording without a beer. I got to do
that. Uh-oh.
Damn. Next time.
Well, speaking of being in conference rooms and chats and whatnot, Yadin, you've been telling us about some things Drew was trying with Facebook for Work, and Mark actually was talking about Microsoft's new Slack killer, which you guys are going to try out. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about these platforms.
Oh, well, Workplace, which is the Facebook for Work piece, it's been super peachy, let me tell you. It looks exactly like Facebook, except you can basically brand it to be an internal team or a place for threading, you know, chats of various kinds. So for those who absolutely love spending all of their time on Facebook and would love nothing more than to be at work and have the exact same experience, this is the product for you, people. And I personally have posted 6 cat pictures just to make sure that we fully vet the product. And all of them came out extremely well, and they all received likes or impressions. And what was it? Rick actually came up with a really great point. There is no place in the workplace for the like button. Yet Yammer, Facebook, all these other ones have actually implemented those. And I really don't care if you liked my comment, because that's actually an alert that I should not have gotten, and a few seconds of my life I will never get back.
So you're loving it.
I think we should talk about that, like and unlike at work. I mean, this does remind me of a Black Mirror episode that was on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, was that the one where everyone has to like everyone? They give you 5 stars? Give me 5 stars?
Exactly, wow. Yeah.
Stars. And if you're really creepy.
And if your rating isn't high enough, you don't get to take advantage of certain things, like, you know, get even scheduled on airlines and whatnot.
You can't even walk into certain buildings if you're not like a 3.8 or something.
Yeah, you
like
can't
that.
Even get into buildings.
Crazy.
Yeah. Did you see that one, Mark?
Yeah, it's a new kind of currency, really. It was like being an elite. In the elite program for, you know, airlines, for rental cars, it was crazy.
But you become unemployable, right?
Right.
If your likes aren't high enough, you become unemployable. Maybe that's my thing.
You need more likes. You got to implement Workplace from Facebook and get lots of likes, and then all your problems will be solved.
If you're looking for work, can you use Workplace? Facebook for Workplace.
Yeah, you can go there and start a thread saying, I'd like to find another job, to all of your coworkers.
Oh, yeah. Would I get dissed, though, by LinkedIn?
No.
Maybe unlike.
So I'll be really interested to see once we start doing that Microsoft Slack killer thing, whatever that is. What is that called again, Mark? I don't know. We're piloting it, whatever it's called.
I don't know. Is it the leftovers of Yammer?
Yeah, it's basically Skype, and there's teams, like team sites within Skype where like you can do chat threading and team group chats and all that stuff. It's basically, I told this to our director of IT who, in case you're listening to the show, John, because he does occasionally. So John, my feedback for the new initiative is if we can have one of our badges taken away from us, meaning, you know, something else, whether it's Slack or some other thing where in stuff isn't constantly coming inbound. If we can have one of those taken away, then maybe I might have the bandwidth to try this out. If not, if it's just one more place, one more inbox, one more input of information, then there's just absolutely no bandwidth.
One more smoking hole.
Oh, man. This information gets to me in way too many ways.
So let's take bets on whether or not Microsoft is eating its own dog food and using this internally. I bet they're not.
Oh, yeah. No.
Well, I just feel like there's just so much. I mean, Cisco's got one, too, called Spark. And, how am I going to have 3 Slack teams and, you know, 4 Spark teams and Facebook, Twitter, email? It's just too much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Skype teams. Skype teams. I don't need a Skype.
Yeah, that sounds very not sexy.
Because when I was back at Microsoft, right, they wanted people to use Yammer, and nobody used it.
Yeah. We have Yammer now. And so it's like we're already using one Microsoft product. It's like, do we really need another Microsoft
product? You have Yammer?
Yeah, we have Yammer.
What do you use it for?
That's a really good question.
Nothing, apparently. Okay, so now you use Microsoft's supposed Slack killer. Something mm-hmm. tells me it's not going to be a Slack killer.
Mm-mm. No, no.
If anything, it might accelerate people to try out Slack.
Yeah, right. You know, if I could aggregate everything into Slack, like, it'd be great. If I could just say Slack grabs all this stuff, grab all my inputs and put it in one place, so like all my chats and stuff will all go through different channels that I could see there in Slack. But the problem is there's too many different teams, you know, I'd be a part of. And so I kind of like it, because really all I use it for is, you know, communicating, you know, with my In Tech We Trust cohort. And it works really well for that. And any other Slack invites I get, they just get lost.
Well, it almost works well, but then we have to keep a separate spreadsheet in Google Docs.
Google Docs.
So Slack doesn't quite work. You know, so maybe Microsoft will use Google Docs.
There you go. I'm sure that.
Well, I imagine they would use Office 360, right?
Yeah, Excel. I'm sure they would. I'm sure they would use Office, but maybe they'll require everyone to have a license for it then.
Right. That's another. Well, to get the business version of Skype, you have to get Office 360 now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they get you one way or another.
Yeah. And if we had the business version of Skype, we could be recording our podcast with it, but we're too cheap.
Yeah.
That's right.
We don't want to pay for that. Thank you, Satya. If you're listening to the show, Satya, thank you.
You know what? We're waiting for Oracle's version of Slack to come out.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
That would be the dark horse Slack.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Oracle and great cloud companies, let's talk about some tech news this week. Study shows AWS has 45% share of public cloud infrastructure market. VMware NSX has another bug, which causes problems for the networking of their VMs.
Boo.
Microsoft still hasn't fixed a bug that allows admin-level access to hackers.
Boo.
Facebook plans to reduce censorship.
Good luck.
Uber's Elevate project aims to bring flying electric cars to cities by 2026, so less than 10 years away.
Whoa.
Well, so what do you guys think? I don't know if this is shocking to anyone or not. The AWS has 45% share of public cloud infrastructure market. So even if you put like Microsoft, Google, and IBM combined, they are not equal to 45%. This doesn't shock me. And I read that that they're actually like all the other companies are doubling every year, but still not catching up to AWS. What do you guys think about that?
Well, they didn't include Google. They didn't include
Oracle.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Oracle, the cloud that really matters. That's the perfect
the company
tagline.
That should not be named.
That really matters. We'll be on the magic quadrant someday.
Yeah. Oh, dang. Yeah, that's not a huge surprise, is it?
Yeah. And my AWS actually provides that, you know, that business to business experience that people are really looking for when they're looking to actually reliably move their applications from on-prem, you know, to the cloud. And I'm not surprised to see, especially with the adverse nature with which a lot of lines of business view the cloud and some of their critical infrastructure, and being able to outsource that to, you know, to a public cloud, that there's so much resistance. And then once you finally have a player that's really dominated, that's really, you know, shown that they're the leader in the space, that, you know, you're going to get an aggregation of business. I think Microsoft is going to start growing at a faster clip than AWS at a certain point. But I think AWS is such a huge lead, such a good brand presence that it's going to be hard to catch up with that.
Hey, so did you guys see, did this break it out by the competitors? I know it lists Amazon as having $3.2 billion in revenue last quarter, you know, AWS having that. Does it list anybody else's? Because, you know, it lumps Microsoft, Google, and IBM together. It'd be interesting to break those out to see. You know, Microsoft has to have the lion's share of that.
Yeah, I don't see it broken out like that for the other players.
Right, because what would be interesting, right, is if you took that graph and you said, let's put Amazon and Microsoft on the same bar and see what their percentage is. Because if Amazon has 45%, maybe Microsoft has 30 or 35. Right? Maybe 30, maybe not that much. But let's say you do that and say, okay, so Amazon and Microsoft have 75%, which means that Google and IBM are, you know, have 25%.
And this comes from Synergy Research too, so I want to know what Gartner has to say.
Well, yeah. Do you know anything about Synergy Research?
I don't know. It's always a bit suspicious when I'm not totally sure about where the source of the information is. Because Gartner is just in the process right now, and I think you guys have mentioned this in the past, where they're actually re-slicing and dicing a lot of their product categories. They're realizing too many companies are lumped into too large of a bucket, and it's not providing any value to those who are trying to compare apples to apples, or even you know pears to apples. I mean, something somewhat close. You're just getting too much diversity in what these companies actually do, and so they're starting to slice it into sort of these niche and micro niche categories that actually help you make business decisions a little bit better. And I think these buckets that they're putting, that Synergy is putting everything into, I think they're just way too big.
I mean, did it recently? We just discovered that pretty much every cloud company is not being totally honest about their earnings around cloud as well.
No.
So. Who knows where these numbers are coming from, too.
But if Amazon's being honest about it, then at least there's 45% honesty out there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Probably. So the guy who wrote this article is a guy named Dan Richman, who used to write for the Seattle Post Intelligencer, and he's been writing for MSNBC and whatnot. And he covers cloud technology development tools, enterprise software and whatnot for GeekWire. So he's been around and doing this. I don't know if I don't know where his research comes from. It sounds like he's a beat writer, but maybe he's doing more, looking into stuff too. And it might have been just information that he, pulled together. He doesn't give any, he doesn't show where his data came from. We're kind of tired of polls now anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's right. Some Amazon earnings reports that kind of provide you with some information, but I want to know what Wikibon has to say about this.
Hey, John. John, if you're listening.
John, that's right.
Moving on to VMware NSX, now states that there's another bug problem that causes network connectivity issues for its VMs. Now, in full disclosure, I do work for Cisco in ACI, which can be considered a competitor, so I just want to put that out there. But this is actually their last release. They had to pull off the shelves, if you will, because of some issues, and now there's a new bug that is causing problems, and there is a fix out there for it. There's a script you can run to fix it. It's a newer product, right? It's not brand new, but it's a newer product, and things happen to software, right? That's going to, and I'm saying that for everything. I'm sure ACI and OpenFlow and whatever other SDN or software products have this issue, but two in a row, that's kind of hard to swallow. And a few of the V experts out there and folks using this are not pleased from what I've read.
I can imagine that. Oh, I think, well, Pat Gelsinger described it as a stubbed toe incident.
Yeah.
I thought that was it.
The first one.
First one. Yeah. And you can give me your take on this as well, even though, you can't speak too highly of NSX, but there's a lot of people that are really excited about it and see this as, as the panacea for much of their networking woes. And they're like, you're not going to be able to blame the network anymore, but I think people will be able to blame the network for years to come. I don't know what your perspective is on that, Mark. Just
as a storage guy, I'm sure he does blame the network.
Damn right.
Well done.
I think it is growing pains and that certainly can happen. But it is probably just worth noting, I think. And I'll be sure to take my hate tweets offline.
Excellent. I sense no bias from you, Lauren. No bias.
Google has been rubbing Microsoft's face in it. They have not fixed a bug in their OS that can allow hackers to get admin level access. So Google reported it offline to Microsoft and Adobe, but Microsoft hasn't fixed it yet.
Microsoft doesn't listen to bugs that are reported by Google?
Apparently not. Adobe did fix theirs, and
did Google just ask Microsoft to download a patch off of Google's, off of Google Drive or something? Is that why?
Maybe Google doesn't have any licenses for Microsoft software.
That's what kind of surprised me, was that Google was so invested in this, and I'm not really sure why. But Google now went public about it to kind of shame Microsoft into getting this fix made. That was kind of the interesting part of the article to me. I don't know what Google's investment is.
So who discovered the bug in NSX? Was that like Microsoft or Oracle?
I think it was something
from Facebook.
That was from the ACI group, wasn't it? Someone from there?
It was me last night.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, I think this was like, isn't this on the heels of some big announcement to sell more Chromebooks or something?
Could be.
I got to find an angle for this.
There's got to be something.
Got to find an angle here.
I mean, think about it, right? How many people inside Google are using Microsoft licensed software?
Or Adobe, for that matter. Or I don't Adobe. Know why there's yeah. Adobe Flash.
No, I mean, Google pays licensing to Microsoft all the time for its phones, you know, for the patents that Microsoft has on phone technology, but that's not licensed software.
Yeah. You got me, Mark. I'm not sure.
I don't know. This is great stuff, right? Why is Google, you know, the whole thing is, okay, if Google finds a bug and they're raising it, you know, if you're Microsoft, is it legit or not, right? It's got to be legit.
I think it's legit. I mean, Adobe went through and actually patched to fix the same bug in their Flash software. I don't know. Maybe they have some sort of, what's it called, bounty hunter program, and one of their bounty hunters found it. I'm not sure.
There you go.
Yeah.
Although Microsoft has those programs as well, so I don't know.
Hey, maybe I should get a job doing that.
There you go. Become white hat.
White hat.
Is that white hat or black hat? If you work for Google and you're finding bugs in Microsoft products, that's a gray hat.
There you go. Yeah. It's a white hat that's got some dirt on it.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. That's the...
Well, Yadin, onto your flying cars. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, now everyone has to redesign their rooftops, apparently, because the parking lots just can't be at ground level. So this is just very, very early days and very limited use cases, because the FCC – or the FCC – the FAA actually has to, like, approve skylanes, and there's all this regulatory hurdles. And I don't think Uber's legal team has any more bandwidth while fighting, you know, every single county and state in the, you know, in America and the country and the world, while at the same time, you know, worrying about, you know, AI, you know, running all of their cars in autonomous mode to actually be able to get something like this off the ground anytime soon. So we've been, you know, promised flying cars since the 60s. So I don't see this happening soon, but it is actually, you know, human drivers, you know, flying cars from one place to another. But I don't see how they could be held responsible. So there has to be, I mean, they don't outline it in their plan, but there has to be an AI driven component to this where you're entering a sky lane and then you basically let the AI take over.
Yeah, because, you know, that anti-gravity paint is just around the corner. I mean, this...
We were promised jetpacks.
Are these going to be like drones? Are these going to be like big drones?
Yeah, basically. The AI drones. These are just...
This is an Uber thing. This is not Tesla. This is Uber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But no, I mean, Uber's, you know, Uber is... and Tesla, I think, would probably... would have a better shot at this. But you know, Uber's, I think, fighting a lot of battles on a lot of different fronts already.
Is Uber actually creating or developing these cars, or are they partnering with someone to make these flying cars?
Yeah, they're basically saying that eventually the planes will be self-flying, but yeah, they're not actually talking about creating aircraft themselves. So yeah, they're
yeah.
You know, very vertipods is what they're calling, or verti, and they're the vertipods, which is a phenomenal name. It's going to roll off the tongue. It's going to be great for marketers around the world. And vertistops is, you know, where these, you know, different little helipads are basically going to go. So they're going to be like little, you know, little drones basically, or like, you know. Yeah, you wouldn't even call them helicopters. I think drones is probably the best description. And eventually, yes, they will be self-driving.
But a drone large enough for a human person
like
to...
Four people. Yeah, about the same as a small sort of subcompact.
Well, they'll have multiple sizes just like Uber does, right? You got a big drone, small drone. So, you know, the question is, where do these things fly? Do they fly, like, over people's houses and stuff?
Oh,
or
they'll fly,
do they have to go over city streets? I mean, I mean, if you're at an intersection stopped, you know, with the traffic signal, does the overhead guys have to stop too, or do they keep going?
I don't know. It's the same problem they're running into with drones. Just creating the skylanes for drones is becoming just a huge, huge mess from a regulatory perspective. And you already know how backwards government agencies can be with technology. And you put something in the sky that could fall out of the sky, That has not been a proven technology, like, you know, aircraft have been, even though they still fall out of the sky. You're
mostly though they just burn on the ground though.
Yeah, that's the landing part that humans have problems with. I think
I'm having PTSD over here.
Flying is totally fine, but the landing part that's where humans, you know, don't do so well.
It's where it gets tricky.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I think the two most important questions here are, are you ever going to get into one of these vehicles, like, in your right mind? And B, like, you know, I've been in Ubers where the guy's just, like, texting his girlfriend and not paying attention to the road, and I can only imagine what this would be in the air. Jesus.
Yeah, so it's completely unregulated, so you'll have people smoking pot, texting their girlfriends, flying you around. Great.
Yeah.
Well, they'll be high. Yeah. It's high. And what are you going to do? This is kind of maybe Lyft will call their sky high, mm-hmm. you know, or something, right? I mean, that's what Uber should call it. We're high.
It's sky high.
Lyfts might be like a propeller, and the mustache would be the propeller.
You know, pink.
pink propulsion. That'll be it.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to some of the business news. And speaking of cars, Tesla shocks Wall Street with huge earnings. Twitter is actually cutting 9% of its global workforce, which I don't know if that's surprising or not. But also Microsoft, it's a big Microsoft show, I guess, this week, whether we like it or not, released its new Surface Studio all-in-one PC. And Qualcomm to acquire NXP Semiconductors for $47 billion. So let's stick with the car topic for right now. We'll put smack dab in the middle of the show. So Tesla has a huge earnings surprise. Yadin, what was the big surprise here?
Yeah, Tesla actually posted a quarterly profit of $22 million, earnings per share of, you know, 71 cents. Revenue for the quarter checked in at $2.3 billion. So those people who don't think that Tesla's making money kind of shut them up a little bit, and is doing the company some giving them some good kudos on Wall Street, which is nice. But you have to wonder why people constantly are naysayers of the Tesla products, even with some of the issues that they've had. When you have tens of thousands of people buying your product before you've even actually, you know, completed the design work, let alone actually produced the product. So, this Tesla has always been a stock and a company that has been light on the earnings side, but is now proven out a business model wherein you are testing the market demand for a product well ahead of the actual production of it, which is, I don't think, recognized as widely as it should be as a really revolutionary move. I mean, they've revolutionized a lot of things in creating this car, even by creating a new car company. But actually changing that business model at scale to the business model that we're seeing now, and they're already starting to be fundraising, you know, or crowdsourcing application platforms that are now using this business model to help other entrepreneurs actually find what the market demand is for their product before it's even conceived or fully conceived of. And I think this is just showing the success of that business model.
Like for flying cars.
Exactly. So if you can find out how many pre-sales you can get for flying cars, you can test out the demand for the product, which at this
point. So I don't imagine, you use the word recognize. I don't imagine, but it was recognized in a different way. You don't imagine Tesla's recognizing any income on pre-order stuff, do you?
That's interesting, actually, because the accounting for the pre-orders is not something I'm fully aware of how they're actually accounting for those. But they do have a good pipeline. They figure out how many, you know, pre-orders people commit to the pre-orders, then actually end up converting to 100% sales. And so that conversion rate is what actually is the key component of what they've proved for the business model, and they've got a really high conversion rate for the people that, you know, actually do those pre-orders, and it helps them from everything from getting, you know, financing to sponsorship on Wall Street to giving them the confidence that they're producing the right product.
Well, the pre-orders were just deposits too, right? It wasn't full payment on the car.
Yeah, but you still have to pay like $5,000 or something like that.
Right. That's it was significant.
That's a heavy skin in the game. Oh yeah,
are they refundable?
Yeah, they are refundable. And I actually was talking to somebody who was asking for a refund. They were excited about it and they did the pre-order, and then they kind of had buyer's remorse, and then they went back and they got their money back. But I'm not
exactly. And now a drone is following them around everywhere.
Yeah, well, now they're on somebody's demand gen sheet, so they get regular emails for signing up for the next model.
I mean that goes along with a question I had too, Mark, was, what if they can't fulfill the orders? And, Tesla famously has been late fulfilling orders, and it doesn't seem to have affected them too much. As you say, Yadin, it's obviously been successful business for them thus far. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, if they can fulfill orders on time, especially with such a significant deposit down.
Yeah, no, I think that is. I think that's a great point that you bring up, Lauren, because it's the inelasticity in the buyer loyalty is really phenomenal for the brand. So that speaks to the brand, not necessarily to the business model, but it shows that if you create a brand like a Tesla, that you actually can convince investors to say no, this actually works. Tesla's done it.
I thought you were going to say suckers.
Oh, dude, every investor is a sucker until the company is successful. Then they're visionaries and entrepreneurs.
Then that's right, yeah.
Like Lauren with ARM.
Right. With all my dozens of dollars from ARM.
You saw the future of semiconductors in the mobile internet tsunami, and you went all in. And now now you're running a podcast.
I tell you, if I was a stockholder in Tesla right now, I would be all in on Solar City too. I'd just say, hell with it, full speed ahead.
Right, all in.
Well, Solar City fell a lot, and it's creeping back up now.
It's got magic dust.
Yeah.
Pixie dust.
Twitter is cutting 9% of its global workforce. I don't think anyone's too surprised about this. I know that they've had some turmoil as of recent, and of course, not a brand new CEO, Jack Dorsey. He came back and is running a couple companies. I know they've had trouble monetizing their stuff. What do you guys foresee here? Is 9% just kind of a regular annual cutting, or yeah. Is there something going on?
I just assumed that was everybody working M&A for them.
That's all. That's all.
Since all their deals fell apart.
They had a big group globally trying to find a buyer, and the buyers all ran away, so they just had to fire their M&A group. Was that your theory, Mark?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty solid, no. But no, it was actually – no, I don't think anyone was surprised by this. In fact, on the show we discussed about it when they closed their one of their India offices. I think that was their full India operations actually. And it only represented 300 or 400 employees or something. But it was very emblematic of the fact that they were doing wider belt tightening. And the 9% cut, it just shows that the growth trajectory is gone. That's the big hit that they're taking, is that, is it a bad decision? Yes, but on multiple levels. On one level is that, well, anyone who really had the argument that, no, it's just a rapidly growing, company, that argument has been slowly waned away from the actively engaged users to the revenue numbers, which actually turned out pretty good. But the big problem was that they had some buyers that were stepping up to the plate. But the problem was that whole process was so public that it inflated the stock price, and then the price of actually purchasing Twitter then became too large for people to stomach. The fact that we're getting at a discount was the reason why people actually were looking into buying them. And I think that's going to happen once it pulls back. And I see this as just their data is so valuable. They're going to be either purchased at some point, or someone's going to figure out how to actually effectively monetize this. Whether or not that's going to, destroy the user experience, we've already, I think, had that discussion and beaten that one to death.
Yeah, but let's have it again. Because
I can always depend on you, Mark. let's have that story up.
Because their data is really valuable and it's really toxic, right? I think one of the reasons why Disney would step away from it is what do? We've already saturated all the assholes and creeps in the world on Twitter. We can't bring any more of them onto Twitter because they're all here already, right? I mean, it's just not family. It's not a family thing.
Yeah, Twitter's not a family platform. No.
So, so Disney's not going to do it. Who do you guys think would purchase Twitter? What are your predictions there? Mark, do you have a thought?
Oracle.
Oracle.
Where you buy everything.
That's probably not far off. You, Dean, what do you think?
I think Amazon's probably a good fit for Twitter.
I like that one, too. I can almost see Microsoft. I mean, I know they got LinkedIn, but maybe they're on some sort of data kick.
We could have Twitter for work. We could pilot that. I'm sure that that's something that would be on our list then. Let's do Yammer. And
pilot on.
Right. Well, there you go.
Microsoft would buy Twitter?
Yeah.
But they've already got like their Slack killer.
Well, they're going to realize LinkedIn is a total loss. And
Because Yadin and I kind of like the LinkedIn deal.
I think it's great for Microsoft. I'm not so sure it's great for LinkedIn, but I think like Twitter, LinkedIn's data is incredibly valuable, tremendously valuable. Its actively engaged users is tremendously invaluable. So I don't think it's a loser right there. I think just Microsoft can do is break it at this point. If they just get out of LinkedIn's way, I think that's going to be the most valuable thing for everybody.
Yeah, and I was coming at it from a data point of view. Speaking of my semiconductor past,
excellent,
Nadine, you posted Qualcomm to acquire NXP Semiconductors for $47 billion. What makes this significant to you?
Qualcomm by NXP. You know what? It's what's really interesting that came out of this. This is one of the deals that came out of this. This has been the largest number of, or the, this year, 2016. The largest number of M&A deals have been applied for. The largest number of M&A deals have been denied this year out of any other year. But at the same time, the biggest deals that have ever been done in history have been done this year. So it's been really a really fascinating year for M&A in total. And that's kind of why this one was on my radar as well as it, you know, being such a large, I mean, $47 billion. It's pretty phenomenal. It's not as sexy as like Dell EMC, which is why I don't think it has the same buzz, but I think it's just really exciting that this year has just been, everyone's talked about how, M&A was dead, but I'm like, it boggles my mind because there's never been so many M&A deals proposed this year, and they've never been so big this year. And the reason why is that money is so cheap for companies right now. Interest rates are so incredibly low, and companies would much rather, it makes a lot more sense on the analysis they're doing to take advantage of cheap money, apply that cheap money to grow through acquisitions. And this is just another one of those huge acquisitions. I don't have an opinion on whether or not it makes good sense for Qualcomm, but I am really interested in the fact that it's part of this whole cohort of 2016 that's kind of blowing M&A up this year. So M&A people are having a good year, 2016.
Now is when we really miss old Hans. Hans, if you're listening to the show, we want to know about, it's Netherlands, right? Netherlands company, mm-hmm. NXP.
Yep.
I suspect that this is just going to put half the population of Netherlands out of work. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Not half the population. There can't be that many people working in NXP. But, when these kinds of acquisitions happen, it'll be interesting to see, what happens there, right? And are the people in NXP, are they happy about it or not? I'd like to hear from somebody over on the other side.
Yeah, that would be good. We always love hearing from people who are at the acquired company because some people are really optimistic about it. Some people chimed in from EMC that were super excited about it. And other people, a lot of people, were not so excited.
Somewhat more quietly, less excited.
Yes. They did not want to, they'd like sign non-disparagement agreements, so therefore they refrained from tweeting about it.
Those were on the Backslack channels.
That's right. There.
Mark, have you seen this new PC from Microsoft?
I haven't. I imagine it runs Windows 10.
Well, that's why you were the first guy I went to on this one, because I know your love of the Windows 10 OS.
Yeah, I have not seen it, but what I heard was that the announcement, people were saying that they out-Appled Apple this week, right? That Microsoft's, the announcement of their new Surface was better done and more interesting and wowsy and all that than Apple's new MacBook.
Oh,
And I think by that you mean that it just costs more.
No, I think the stage show was supposedly better.
Oh.
Yeah. I actually did read that Microsoft now costs more than getting Apple MacBooks. But anyway, Yadin, sorry, you were about to say something there.
Oh. I'm not going to buy it, though. I'm just not buying one.
Oh, come on, Mark. You got to buy it.
I don't want it. I don't want a Surface.
Well, Rick, in about 7 years, Rick will have one, so then we can talk about it.
First chat. <Yeah. laughs>
Yeah, he's still running his original.
No,
have you seen this? Does it look cool to you?
You know what? It's funny. On the surface, it looks cool. First glance, it looks interesting though. I'm a MacBook Air guy now. I was on Windows until 8 came out. But the only thing I was disappointed with in the show, the one thing that could have taken it up one more notch is if they had run a next version of the operating system. So when they unveiled it, they could say, this one goes to 11.
Nice. Yeah.
Good one. Turn it up.
Yeah. Goes all the way to 11.
That's right. That would have just capped.
One thing I noticed is, and I didn't see the actual show, but I just saw a little video of the new PC. And it looks really difficult. Like, there's just too many things that it could do. Like, there's a dial that's, like, also a mouse that you can either keep on the desktop or you can, like, put it on the monitor and change colors of things. And maybe you just need to be, like, a designer or something to understand all that stuff. But it's like, wow, I don't know. It might be too much. Maybe I'm becoming the old curmudgeon.
Are you saying that Microsoft is packing up more features into its products than people will actually use?
I know that might be shocking.
Yeah,
I don't know. It went from radical idea, Laura. I'm not sure. I want to make sure I'm getting this right. What you're saying here?
Yeah, it's the over featured, over expensive product from Microsoft.
Yeah, I would hate to start that rumor about Microsoft.
Yeah, don't.
Oh, come on. Be a curmudgeon.
Satya's not listening to this one.
Join the curmudgeon side.
Yeah. It's so dark here.
So gloomy. That about wraps up the show, and we have one last feature, and I'll let Yadin take it away, hot or not, if you want to take it from here, Yadin.
Oh, hot or not. Okay, so hot or not, Apple's Tim Cook, as if there's another Tim Cook that I would mention, says he's going to be the cash killer, which, you know, as everyone knows, everyone loves to kill things in Silicon Valley. So Apple's Tim Cook said, we're going to kill cash, and basically saying that the Apple platform is going to make cash a thing of the past, at least in, you know, certain circles, like those who use nothing but the iPhone and go to Whole Foods for everything. So, Lauren, I'll start with you, since I have an idea of what Mark's going to say. You think Tim Cook is going to kill cash?
I think the idea, theoretically, of getting rid of cash is hot. Do I think Apple or Tim Cook are going to do it, or anyone, for that matter, are going to do it? No, not anytime soon at all. And I actually just heard a huge, not a huge podcast, but a podcast on this exact subject. I think it was Freakonomics, and all about, you know, killing cash and are we able to do it? And there actually have been some small societies that can do it, but a society such as ours, probably it's not going to happen. There are too many people worried about privacy and security. They want to be able to pay cash for things. So while I like the idea of it because I hate having to carry around cash, I don't think it's going to happen from Tim Cook or anyone else anytime soon.
So you're saying I got a hot for the idea, but a not hot for for Tim Cook. Not just Apple in general, but
right.
Just Tim Cook's, you know, the timing of his announcement.
Exactly.
All right. How about you, Mark?
Well, I'm normally not libertarian, but I'm going to take that perspective on this one. I'm going to say this is so freaking hot because what it's going to mean is that everything that goes on in the black market now is going to have to be as transacted with iPhones, right? So if you want to go buy, whether it's illegal fireworks or drugs or vice of any kind, right, you'll be transacting it now on an iPhone instead of using cash. You know, there won't be any hidden like cash deals anywhere. You know, it's going to be great. Everybody will just transact everything on iPhones, which means that all of the stuff that's illegal will have to become legal. I mean, there just has to be a way for that stuff to work.
There's some weird like black market Bitcoin.
There you go.
Yeah,
can I hook up my Bitcoin account to my Apple, you know, Apple Pay account?
Yeah, God, this is so great. Yeah, so Bitcoin gets really big as the underground economy transaction thing. I think it's great.
Oh, wow.
Bring it on.
Okay.
So let's legalize all this stuff anyway.
There you go.
Yeah,
agreed. We're legalizing everything. Fantastic.
And paying for it with an iPhone.
Yes.
Right.
Well, fine.
I mean, I mean, if I could pay for it, well, pot won't be illegal, right? Before long, we're gonna, you know, we'll, it'll be legal everywhere. So let's see. I wanted to pay for cash for that. That's not that I am, but I would. Have I said too much already?
If you were.
Yeah, I have a friend. I'm asking for a friend of mine.
All right. Well, I'll weigh in on my side. I'd say yes, definitely. The Killing Cash, I think, is phenomenally hot, and I love it when I've walked into like my store, like out here. You know, we've got Lucky's, and as a grocery store, I can not worry about bringing my wallet into the store, and I could just have my phone, and just I could be text messaging or doing whatever on my phone, and when it comes time to pay, I could just stop typing and just wave it. You know, put my thumbprint on and I go, and I don't have to worry about, you know, 4 years later, you know, having an announcement on TechCrunch that, you know, that Lucky has had, you know, 4 million credit card numbers stolen, you know, because I was using my iPhone, and, you know, and there's nothing there to steal.
I just like the thought of, you know, where people are carrying these phones, whether they're like in their back pocket or whatever, you know. And so instead of taking the phone out, you just kind of wave that part of your body or your clothing around at the sensor.
You still got to touch it with your finger, your thumb, though. So I'm not quite sure how.
Oh, I've got to touch my toes now, so you can read my phone.
Yeah, I'm not seeing how.
Where are you keeping your phone?
Yeah, seriously.
Cough for me.
Oh my goodness! You know, I have to though throw this out there, Tim Cook. If you can, you know, it would be really hot, Tim. If you said that you made a deal with like all of the whatever, you know, gas stations in the Bay Area that they could now take Apple Pay, okay? Because that's the last place that I want to be using, you know, my credit card. I can't believe there hasn't been a mass credit card theft from all these gas stations. I feel like those are the most unsecure points of payment.
Yeah, there have been.
Yeah.
There have been, right? But the petroleum industry doesn't want to get together and make news out of that.
No.
I mean, people go and they stick the, you know, the alternative reading strips or whatever in, you know, gas station pump readers all the time.
Yeah, I want Apple Pay at gas stations. Okay, Tim, if you're listening to this, because I know you're a regular listener, Tim, could you please get Apple Pay at gas stations? At least start with Costco. Thank you. All right,
let's end it on that note. Thanks, guys, for joining. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week.